Every culture has a name for it. We call them imaginary friends.
How does it feel being back?
Good. I had such good memories here. Maybe my happy place can be our happy place.
I left you all alone down here. It was just my imagination. I'm playing a new game with Chauncey.
The scavenger hunt with. That's fun.
Chauncey says you're not allowed to play with us.
Oh.
Because you left him. I need something happy.
Something happy? Ugh. That bug freaked you out.
If I can finish my list, Chauncey will take me on a trip to the place he's from.
Something that hurts.
You've been spending time with a new friend. She asked you to do something that hurt you.
That was part of the game.
Does that seem like a game a good friend would want to play?
Maybe we shouldn't play together anymore, Chauncey. Maybe we shouldn't be friends.
No.
Alice! She's lost, but we're gonna find her.
Every culture has entities that tether to the young. We call them imaginary friends. You are always staying with your imaginary friend. When the connection is severed, the entity becomes enraged.
He says he's right behind you.
But it was just my imagination.
Can I hang out with your imaginary friend?
He's not imaginary. He's not your friend.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Lives on Fresh Cuts. This is Mike. Joining me, as always, it's Mr. Venom. What's up, Venom?
Greetings and salutations, imaginary friends, or real listeners. I don't know. Whichever fits. How the hell are you doing, Mike?
Well, when they find out what we're covering, which they should already know, we might have imaginary listeners for this episode. We'll see. I'm doing okay, though. Doing well. Also with us, it's Don and Ellie. What's up, Don?
Fuck you, Jeff Wadlow.
Oh, what a way to start. I love it.
Yeah, he has quite the roster of movies directed by now, I heard. But yeah.
Yeah.
If you...
I just make you the best one and let my greetings show you how I feel about him.
All right. Well... Anyone who listens to most of our episodes, namely the last episode before this, knows we were covering imaginary for this episode, and unfortunately nothing deterred us away from doing that. We had a long streak of VOD, so we were kind of happy to get back to the theater, crossing our fingers that when we did, we would get something at least decent. Did we? Well, we're about to find out. We are covering imaginary. It's rated PG-13, hour and 44 minutes, as Don so graciously mentioned already. It's directed by Jeff Wadlow. Yeah. And that was a synopsis off IMDb is as follows. A woman returns to her childhood home to discover that the imaginary friend she left behind is very real and unhappy that she abandoned him. Man, if that sounds like a reworking of a ton of other Blumhouse movies... I wouldn't blame you for thinking that, but let's see if Imaginary reworks it in a good way or not. Venom, what are your general thoughts on Imaginary?
Imaginary is boring as fuck. I'm sorry, friends. This movie dulled the shit out of me. Is this worse than Night Swim? I'm not sure. I think it is. I think Night Swim No, actually, I think Night Swim might have been a little bit worse, because at least this one had, like, a tangible creature, an actual creature design that, you know, in the last 15 minutes of the movie kind of turn into a little bit of a roller coaster ride. So I'll give it that. Whereas Night Swim never turned into a roller coaster ride. So, yeah, I'll say Night Swim is still the worst Blumhouse movie of the year, but this one is not far behind it. Like I said, a very basic story. If you've ever seen an imaginary friend horror movie, then you've already seen this movie, and you probably already saw a better one. I mean, over the last couple of years, we had stuff like Z, and even last year's Cobweb, you can kind of, sort of say it's an, at least it started out as an imaginary friend type movie. Obviously, it turned into something else about halfway through. But like I said, if you've seen an imaginary friend horror movie, you've seen probably something better than imaginary. Very basic story, very basic setup. And once again, just like with Night Swim, we get that fucking horror family hierarchy that I can't stand. Once again, we have a divorced couple with an older daughter who's an absolute bitch for no reason. Gee, I haven't seen that in like 3 weeks. You know, and then of course the younger, usually it's a younger brother. In this movie, it's a younger sister, so a little bit of a change. But overall, yeah, this thing is so derivative, so boring, so dull. And then the last 15, 20, not even 20, I'd say like the last 10 to 15 minutes of the movie, there's some actual decent like set pieces when they actually go into the imaginary land, if you will. And, you know, see some of the set pieces in there. And, you know, we actually finally get to see Chauncey in all of his glory. So the last few minutes are okay, but it really does not make up for the first hour and a half of this movie. This movie is an hour and 45 minutes. The first hour and a half feels like 3 hours long. And then the last 15 minutes just goes by really fast because you finally get something that's moderately fun. But, yeah, overall, this is one that I would absolutely skip. There's nothing here that needs to be seen. None of the, you know, performances are really that great that they need to be seen. In fact, there's one performance in here by an older woman, a next-door neighbor, an old friend of Jessica, who was hamming it up the entire movie. I wanted to strangle her every single time she was on screen. She was such a terrible actress. And just trying way too hard to over-emote and to be this mysterious figure of, oh, I knew you when you were young, and, oh, you were so, you know, you had to go through so much, but never actually saying what, just being cryptic as fuck the entire movie, just really annoying as hell. One thing I will say that the movie did that I liked, and I don't know if this is even really something to praise. This is really just more of a personal thing. The dad in this movie is almost non-existent. What they decided to do was they made him a touring musician. So he was actually out of the movie on tour for the majority of the film. I mean, he's probably only in the movie for the first 10, 15 minutes maybe, and then he's gone the rest of the movie. And I will prefer that over the skeptical spouse. You guys all know how much I get infuriated by the skeptical spouse or the skeptical parent in a horror movie. I'm just so sick of it. And at least this movie, they usurped that a little bit by having the dad, like I said, be a touring musician and just not even be a part of any of the supernatural stuff going on. Literally, he never sees anything, he never hears anything, and he leaves and we never see him again in the movie. He basically just remains on tour. So, you know, like I said, I'll take that over the skeptical spouse any day of the week. Jessica, you know, our main actress, or our main character, I should say, played by DeWanda Wise, is fine. I mean, you know, she's not hard to look at, definitely. Like I said, the rest of the family, it's just that horror hierarchy, that family hierarchy that we've seen. Divorced, you know, dad with his new wife, his stepkids who hate his new wife, a 15-year-old daughter who's an absolute cunt for no reason. My friends, Jessica, the stepmom, does everything in her ability to make this girl at least mildly respect her, and she's just an absolute bitch for no fucking reason other than it's not her real mom. And it's like, Jessica at no point tells you to call her mom or to treat her like she's your mother. Nothing. She was trying to be your friend the whole goddamn movie, and you just spit it back at her. And I understand that characters have to have growth in these films, so, you know, maybe she has to start out like an asshole so that she can have that redemption as the movie goes along. But no amount of redemption is going to make up for Taylor's character. Taylor is just a bitch for no fucking reason. The way that she talks to her mother, I question the way that she talks to her friends at school. Like, I think Taylor is a legit bully. She comes off like a bully to her own stepmother. So at school, she's probably a fucking bully too, which means I already hate you. I don't care about you. You could die in the second scene and I wouldn't give a shit. So, I've got a lot more gripes about the movie, but I think I'm just going to cut it off right there. I'm just going to say this movie commits the worst crime a horror movie can commit, and that's being fucking boring. Night Swim did it. Multiple other Blumhouse movies have done it. Multiple movies directed by Jeff Wadlow have done it. I mean, this guy gave us, you know, Trick or Treat and Fantasy Island. Oh, those absolute classics of horror that I
don't. I mean, Truth or Dare.
What's that?
It's Truth or Dare, not Trick or Treat.
Oh, I'm sorry. Truth or Dare. I said Trick or Treat. Blumhouse is Truth or Dare. You're right. But like I said, just everything this guy's done, everything that Blumhouse is giving to us lately. I don't know if this was worse than Insidious: The Red Door, because it felt very similar at times. You know, the whole thing with painting a door on the wall to get into another dimension, blah, 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 blah. It seems like Blumhouse movies are starting to turn formulaic, and I say starting in quotations because they probably started becoming formulaic 10 years ago. But now that I'm reviewing them regularly, I really see the formula, and it's just dull. It's boring. I'd rather this movie had never been made. Like, what is the point of even making this movie? Is this going to advance Jeff Wadlow's career? Is this going to make Jason Blum $1 billion? No. So why the hell are we making this movie? This movie should have been straight to VOD. $2.99 on Amazon. That's about as good as this movie deserves. I'm sorry. It's just, I'm not going to sit here and say that it's a bad movie. It is an objectively boring movie and just a pretty stupid movie in general. Like, nothing about it is exceptional. I just don't know what else to say. Save your money, folks, is the best thing I could say. Wait for this thing to hit streaming. And even then, I would still say ignore it. But if you have to watch it, then wait for streaming at the very least. That's it for me, Mike.
All right. Over to Don for your thoughts on Imaginary.
Yeah. Wow. This is literally the fourth piece of shit I've seen from Jeff in his catalog so far, and I think that's the only four films that he's made. So I can't say I disagree with practically anything that Venom said. Man, this thing is just awful. I shouldn't say awful, because there is, like he said, some technical qualities about it that do look good. I mean, you know, some of the jump scares aren't, you know, bad. You know, the general tone and production, just it looks like that, you know, slick mainstream kind of style that, it literally looks like it's a mainstream kind of a movie. So I will say that. And yes, the final 15-20 minutes are objectively not awful. That's, you know, where the majority of the horror aspects of this one are kind of, you know, hiding out in. But yeah, the journey to get there is just so, so infuriating. This thing is so paint by numbers, I struggle to even call this a drinking game, because you're going to be so hammered by 5 minutes in that I doubt you're going to be able to fit the rest of the tropes in. I mean, this thing just hits every single beat. It hits every single cliche, and it does so with the subtlety of a sledgehammer. The well-meaning stepmother, the just arrogantly obnoxious cunt of a stepdaughter, the well-meaning, you know, youngest child, the absentee father, the cryptic best friend. I mean, everything about this thing is just so cliche and so obvious and telltale that I struggle to see how this thing got greenlit. Is Jason so hung up for projects that he doesn't rewrite these things anymore? This thing feels like a first draft kind of a script, and I'm not a screenwriter. I can't say that I've taken, you know, I haven't tried my own attempt at it, but I mean, Jesus, man, there is such a thing as a pre-production period where you take like a second or third stab at things, and anybody worth their salt would have seen any kind of cliches just signposted with all, you know, like I said, it's signposted with the subtlety of a sledgehammer. I mean, there's nothing about this that takes any kind of originality. There's nothing here that makes anything, you know, feel clever or unique or well thought out. And then it just takes so long to actually get to the imaginary friend itself. Like, the reason why I think me and Venom, and I'm pretty sure Mike is going to say the same thing, that the final 15, 20 minutes are the best part of the movie, is because that's generally the only real horror qualities that this thing has. Because the rest of this is just mired in such absolutely agonizing backstory about the characters that there's no genre qualities to really speak of. I mean, one or two jump scares of, you know, something in the shadows that you don't quite see, but there's no horror at all for an hour into this. The, you know, youngest daughter, you know, her early claims are kind of creepy, but they don't do anything with them until way too late because there's all this other extraneous bullshit going on. And as a whole, nothing really is, you know, draws you in and makes you want to care or follow about what goes on. I mean, the family is an absolute asshole to everybody. None of the other characters are original enough to really stand out, and by the time anything starts happening, you just don't care anymore. So, yeah, I think I liked Night Swim more, although I think this is probably a better made movie. I may have to revisit Night Swim, but that's not exactly something not exactly something I'm going to be clamoring to be doing, so that's probably going to be, you know, a project for future me sometime down the line. So, you know, good luck to, you know, whoever you are in the future. You know, bring your sleeping pills because you're going to need them. But I would say that I think I liked Night Swim more, even though I think this was probably an objectively better made technical movie, but I am in no rush to confirm or deny those statements in any way, shape, or form. I'm just happy to say, please, 2024, get better. Get better, please. This is agony.
Yeah.
I want to be excited about something. I want to sound positive. Yeah. Get better, please. Mike, over to you.
Mike, yeah. Make it better.
I'll double down on that. I want to be able to look forward to these episodes of Fresh Cuts at least really? Like once or out of the we average what about four episodes a month? At least like 50% of them, I want to be happy that we're you know clocking out of work and clocking into Fresh Cuts. But I had a big rant like ready to go, but Dom actually touched on like a lot of what I was gonna say. I feel like when it comes to Blumhouse. You know, I can't even say that, like, it's 100% like just Blumhouse being Blumhouse, because if I had a list in front of me of every Blumhouse release, there's plenty that I would say are fine or even good. The problem is Blumhouse has this kind of good cop, bad cop thing where, like, a lot of their movies, I feel like they almost treat them the way an investment firm treats flipping a house. There's no really care for the movie. It's... We know how much we have to invest to turn a profit. We know, like, if we just kind of give it this generic story with generic characters, thrown a few jump scares, cut a decent looking trailer to bring interest. We know a certain amount of people will show up for it regardless of how good or bad the movie is. And it feels like movies like this, that's really their only aim. And as a fan of movies and specifically horror movies, it sucks feeling like that. Like when you're like halfway through the movie and you're just like, why is this even being made? Like, why do they think that this was a good idea? And I think it's just because Blumhouse more or less makes money off other movies. I think this had like a – last I read, I think it had like a $10 million opening, which for Blumhouse, that usually means they're going to turn a profit. Like $10 million doesn't sound like a lot, but they just are becoming very good at kind of making these like lower-end budgets. And obviously, I mean like on a theatrical scale, because low budget, not a VOD budget, but like for theatrical releases, it's probably considered low budget. So they find a way to turn a profit regardless of the quality of the movie. This kind of falls into that grouping of movies where there just doesn't seem much care or creative juice into the process of it being made. As far as like, we've compared it kind of to Night Swim. I would say out of the two, Night Swim probably held my attention for more of the movie, but I would just say, if there's one thing to credit the movie, I would say the last like 15, 20 minutes of this is probably better than anything from Night Swim. But as an entire movie, I was more interested in where Night Swim was going to go. It just didn't end up going anywhere impressive. That's the problem. But like the sequences in this, once we kind of get to where we're going at, unfortunately, we had to sit through like an hour and 20 minutes before that happened, because for some reason, this is an hour and 44 minutes, which is absolutely...
Yeah, that was another thing. I was like, is this right? Because I didn't think the running time on that thing was real. Like, why is this an hour and 45 minutes?
I don't know. I wish that was an imaginary run, I'll tell you that much, because it was very real and I felt every minute of it. But yeah, I mean, we've already touched on some of the plot elements, and Don said lots of it's cliche. It just feels like Blumhouse does this thing where it's like it seems like they rework like elements from this movie that they put out, and they'll mix in a little of this, and it just starts to feel like so familiar. Like, I've seen this movie from Blumhouse like 10 times by now, and not even like over the course of the entire existence of Blumhouse, but like in the last 2 years. And that's not to say all of them there's some of them that use these plot devices that are actually decent, but in this case, no, it's like they just literally, oh, we'll take the jump scares from this. We'll take the use of creepy kid with dead eyes and put mix it in. Oh, we'll use the use of flipping on a light or not, and shadows, and ooh, it's an actual monster. Like, it just all feels like it's going through the beats of everything you would expect. Nothing really surprising, and just nothing very interesting. And that's kind of like the worst aspect in a movie. Is like I think when Venom referred to it, it's just kind of boring. That's kind of the worst thing you can be in a movie, and that's what I felt this was for the most part. And it set in relatively quick. I think that was another issue, is like, it didn't even take very long for me to be like, wow, this is kind of something changes, and then it just didn't, unfortunately.
Yep.
But other than that, I don't have a lot to add. Like, you guys really hit on most of what I was going to say. I mean, we're all in agreement, probably for the wrong reasons, at least as far as the movie goes. But hey, what can I say? It's pretty unanimous so far on what we thought about this movie. So I'll leave it there for the moment. But yeah, not a good one. This is probably the type of movie, if I wasn't doing a podcast, I would have seen Blumhouse Imaginary, PG-13, hour 44 minutes. I'll catch it on Netflix, maybe. But
yeah.
All right, back to you, Venom.
Just to let you know, the movie has a $13 million budget, so it's gonna have to recoup its money overseas, because the movie made $9.8 million here over the weekend, and it's not likely gonna have a lot in the second and third weeks, because I literally watched about a half dozen reviews, and they're all scathing. I've yet to see a positive review for this movie, so.
It's funny you mentioned that, Benham, because actually today while I was working, I was like, man, I'm going to throw on – I just went to YouTube and, like, Google – or not Google, but searched for reviews because I was like, man, I'm pretty down on this movie, but maybe there's something I missed. And, no, pretty much every review is echoing everything we said.
I mean, most of the reviewers were actually even a little bit more harsh than we were. I mean, you know, I'm not going to call a movie, you know, a bag of flaming garbage ever, but, you know – sometimes it's this isn't quite a dumpster fire necessarily. I mean, we've seen a lot worse movies than this. Hell, in the last month, we've seen worse movies than this. So it's not the worst thing ever. But like I said, it's objectively boring. And that's just that's a travesty. You can't do that in the horror genre. You can make a good movie. You can make a bad movie, but you can't make a boring movie. Like, hell, a couple of weeks ago I watched Curse of the Clown Motel. stupid fucking movie with Tobin Bell and Randy Couture. Guess what? I'd rather watch that 1,000 times again before I watch either Night Swim or Imaginary again in a minute. Because even though that movie is, like, objectively not good, at least it was fun, it was self-aware, it knew what it was. It's not like it was trying to be anything revolutionary. And obviously Tobin Bell is awesome in anything he does. I mean, he plays the same character in every movie. He's Tobin Bell. So, but yeah, this one, there's so little to really kind of celebrate with this movie. You know, none of the performances are really exceptional. The score is just there. The cinematography is fine. It's not bad, but it's not, like, you know, exceptional either. One thing that we haven't talked about is the creature design. Our antagonist.
Well, I figured that would be something for the spoiler section, so I never.
Exactly. Like, I'm not going to talk specifically about what they look like right now, but Chauncey did have two major forms, and I'm not talking about the teddy bear either. The teddy bear was just, you know, the teddy bear is kind of like Annabelle. It's just a conduit for the demon. It's not the actual demon itself. And then when we actually see Chauncey in his true form, he has two major, like, forms. And both forms make a lot of sense for Jessica, considering what she does for a living, how powerful her imagination is, things like that. But what's funny is that one of his forms, I'm just going to say it, it's the teddy bear. Not the good teddy bear, the gigantic evil teddy bear. I think we actually see that in the trailer, so that's not a spoiler. I did go back and watch a trailer, and the trailer for this movie is even boring. I couldn't believe it. But for whatever it's worth, I actually liked it because it was so big and stupid looking with its sharp teeth. Just something about it worked for me. It reminded me of an episode of Monsters. Mike, I know you watch Monsters. Do you remember that episode called Ursa Major, where it was about a little kid making a wish and then his teddy bear comes to life? Yes, and it's actually Ursa Major. That's what this reminded me of. It kind of reminded me of that. Now, obviously, on a TV show like Monsters, hokey creature design is a little bit more acceptable, you know, TV yeah. budgets and everything. I wouldn't go so far as to call it hokey. It's kind of silly. Even in its full, like, 8-foot form with all its teeth and claws, it does have a Five Nights at Freddy feel to it, admittedly. But for whatever it's worth, I did kind of enjoy it. His other form, which I'll save that for the spoiler section, but his other form, which is more based on Jessica's writing, we never really get to see it that well. It's always in the shadows. It's always kind of from behind. I kind of wish we would have seen that a little bit more. But then again, I'm thinking if they did hide it in the shadows, maybe it looked bad. Maybe the CG wasn't great.
That'd be my guess. Yeah, my guess is they're trying to cover up CGI stuff.
Exactly. So, you know, ultimately the creature designs here aren't bad. They could have been improved, absolutely. They definitely could have been better. But for whatever it's worth, it's one of the things I actually kind of like about the movie. Maybe not the effectiveness of his true form, but just the fact that he had them and, like, why he decided to have them. you know, why he decided to choose those forms. One being the teddy bear is the obvious one. And then the other one we'll get into in the spoiler section. But yeah, man, I'm not sure what else we can get into here that's spoiler free. Like I said, we talked about some of the major characters. We talked about some of the situations, how just derivative it is, how we've seen this story before and probably in a better form. Man, yeah, there's just not really a whole lot to really get into. So I guess unless you guys have anything else to add, I guess we can walk into what will hopefully be a quick walkthrough.
Yeah, imagine a quick walkthrough and maybe it'll happen.
I'm going to imagine it. All right, folks. So, Imaginary opens up with we get a cold open where we see Jessica, our main actress Jessica. Obviously, we don't know who she is. We're watching the scene out of context. We see her in some kind of weird dark realm with, like, you know, dark lighting and fog and things like that. She's obviously running away from something. We don't see what that something is, but she's running away from something. She eventually goes through a kind of an opening in a cement wall and ends up back in the real world in what appears to just be her house. About a minute later, we see her father also come out of that same opening in the wall that Jessica had just come out of, and he's actually fighting something. Once again, we do not see what he's dealing with, but we see that he's kind of punching and kind of trying to push something back so that he can close the opening in the wall, which he does successfully do. He's able to close it, paint over it with some black paint, again, very reminiscent of Insidious, The Red Door, and that's the end of our cold open. And I should say the cold open ends with Jessica yelling, "Sorry, we couldn't finish our game." And that's pretty much all the dialogue we get in the cold open. So then we're introduced, it's many years later, and we're introduced to Jessica, her husband Max. Obviously, this is a new husband, as Jessica is the stepmother to Taylor and Alice. Taylor is the 15-year-old angsty bitch who is an angsty bitch for no fucking reason whatsoever, other than it's cool to be an angsty bitch, apparently. I don't know why, but whatever. What's funny is that every 15-year-old girl I've ever known are usually nice. Like, they're not inherently bitchy. Like, I don't know why Blumhouse seems to think that 15-year-old white girls from the suburbs are absolute cunts. I don't know. I don't know why they have that mentality, but there it is. So, whatever. So like I said, we have a family of four, and they are moving into Jessica's childhood home. Jessica and Max just got married. They were living in the city. They don't say what city, just living in the city. And they're moving back into Jessica's childhood home, the home where she grew up, the home where we saw the cold open earlier, where her father had lived for, you know, for decades after Jessica had left. We find out that Jessica was taken away from her dad and ended up going to live with grandparents, I believe. So, like I said, they're moving back into this house. On one of the first days there, they decide, Jessica and Alice decide to play hide-and-go-seek. You know, we get the standard scene of Alice, the little girl, counting to 10. Now, Jessica, Jessica is so not an attentive parent that literally in the middle of the hide-and-go-seek game, she gets a phone call on her cell phone and literally just walks out of the house to take the call, doesn't tell Alice that she's leaving, doesn't tell her to hold on or stop the game. Nope. She just walks out of the house and lets Alice basically going through the house looking for Jessica. What ends up happening is Alice, who apparently is the bravest little fucking girl in the world, decides to go into the basement of this house that she just moved into. Dark as hell, dirty, dusty, grubby, but she walks down there. When she gets down there, she starts hearing voices. She actually starts hearing a voice call her name. Does she run in terror out of the basement? Nope. She continues investigating. Again, it's like Blumhouse has never met a real-life child. You know, all the kids in the Blumhouse world are either assholes or the bravest kids in the world, and neither one of them makes sense. So, yeah, fuck off, Blumhouse. So, Alice continues looking through the basement. Eventually, this little hidden door or eventually Alice finds a hidden door behind some crates and some boxes down in the basement. She opens the door, and there inside a little room is just a teddy bear sitting by itself, nothing else in the room, just a teddy bear. And instantly, she hears the bear talking to her. We as the audience don't actually hear Chauncey talking, but she is replying to it like it's talking to her. She's like, oh, your name is Chauncey. I like that name. Cool. Would you like to be my friend? And they're literally having an entire conversation that we're only hearing one side of. She ends up taking the bear and ends up keeping it as her own. Jessica, after about 20 minutes of being on the fucking phone, finally walks back in the house and sees that Alice has found this bear. And suddenly Alice doesn't want to play hide and go seek anymore. Like, she's vehement about it. No, I'm going to play with Chauncey because you didn't want to play with me. You know, she's like mad that Jessica took the phone call. So from that point on, it's just your standard, imaginary friend tropes. You know, the bear will sometimes move on its own. Sometimes it'll turn its head, blah, blah, blah. Eventually, as the movie goes along, we start to hear Alice speaking as Chauncey. She, like, you know, distorts her voice. She does her best Batman voice, you know, her best Christian Bale Batman, and pretends that that's Chauncey's voice. Where's the movie? I only watched the movie once, folks, and it wasn't very good, so I probably am not going to remember every scene. Okay, I'm just going to skip over to the therapist. There's one thing, yeah. One night, Jessica thinks that she hears movement in the house. At this point, Dad has already left. Like I said, Dad's only in the movie for like 10, 15 minutes. His name is Max. He's a touring musician. He ends up leaving the house, leaving Jessica alone with the two girls. At one point when the list. Let me do the list first. So anyone who saw the trailer knows that Alice is playing a game with Chauncey, and there's a list, and she's basically doing a scavenger hunt with Chauncey. And it's a double-sided piece of paper. So all the stuff on the front of the paper is fairly unmenacing. It's like, get something that makes you happy, get something blue, get a bowl, things like that. But then at one point in the film, Jessica finds the list and she turns it over to the second side. And the second side is a little bit more disconcerting. There's items on there like something, get something that burns, get something that scares you, and get something that hurts you. And that's like the major one that, you know, makes everybody flip out, because what ends up happening is Alice ends up taking a broken piece of board off of, like, one of the panels or one of the slats off of a fence, off of a wooden fence. And, of course, there's a rusty nail on it. This scene is also represented in the trailer, so if you saw the trailer, you know this one. Alice is looking at the nail sticking out of the board, but by her POV, it looks like a dandelion. It doesn't look like a nail, but to the audience perspective, we see that it's a rusty nail sticking out of a piece of wood. Alice, again, is having a one-sided conversation with Chauncey, where she says, I don't want to do this. I don't think I want to do this. Chauncey eventually does talk her into it. She picks up her hand to slam it down on the dandelion / rusty nail. Mom shows up at the nick of time and moves the board off the table, just shoves it off the table so she doesn't hurt herself. At this moment, this is where we're introduced to the neighbor, Gloria. Gloria is an older woman who's been living in the neighborhood a very long time, and she actually knows Jessica from when Jessica was a child because she babysat Jessica. Yes, this is Jessica's childhood babysitter. She remembers that Jessica went through a major trauma her last night at the house, but she's very cryptic. She tries to keep her, you know, the things that she knows kind of under wraps and, you know, trying to make herself a mysterious character, but it just comes off as kind of dumb and hokey, honestly, and it just feels like Gloria's overacting. Betty Buckley is the name of the actress, and, man, we know Betty Buckley, too. Man, that's terrible. But, anyway, okay, so she explains to Jessica that something happened and that she had to be taken away and that it wasn't necessarily her father's choice, but that for Jessica's safety, she had to be sent away. And that's pretty much how they leave it there. Eventually, Alice becomes more and more withdrawn, doesn't really want to talk to Jessica or Taylor, her sister. She just wants to play with Chauncey. She just wants to play with the bear. Eventually, Jessica decides to call up Alice's former therapist. And why does Alice have a therapist? Because Alice and Taylor's mom had a mental breakdown years before. The reason that Alice and Taylor's real parents are divorced is because the mom had a mental breakdown of some kind. We're not really given a whole lot of explanations.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. She broke down. So that's it. So apparently when your wife has a mental breakdown, that's grounds for divorce. Fucking asshole. Anyway. So one night, like I said, Jessica is in her house with the kids. She thinks that she hears somebody in the house. She walks up to Alice's bedroom door, which is slightly ajar. She hears Alice talking to someone. She assumes that she's talking to Chauncey, because when she starts to look around the edge of the door, she sees Alice sitting at the table, and then she sees Chauncey sitting at one of the seats. But then as she takes another step forward, she sees that there's actually a person sitting across the little table, the little tea set, across from Alice, and runs away and hides. And Jessica storms into the room like, who was that? Is there someone in here with you? Alice, of course, denies it, that there's anybody in there. But eventually, someone maybe not attacks, but kind of jumps out of the darkness towards Jessica. And as it turns out, it's Alice and Taylor's real mom. Apparently, she broke out of the facility that she was being kept in and came back to this house. Why does this woman know where this house is? Because don't forget, this is Jessica's childhood home. Very few people know that the family have moved here. The reason that the mom knows is because Taylor contacted her and literally told her exactly where she was. Just again, Taylor just being an absolute bitch for no fucking reason. Blah, blah, blah. The mom ends up getting taken away, sent back to the facility that she was at. Dad is already on the road at this point, so there's, you know, no way to really tell him, you know, what's going on, blah, 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 so whatever. Let's see, where do we go from there? Okay, and then let's get back to the therapist. Okay, so at this point, Jessica calls Alice and Taylor's former therapist. But she's calling her specifically to speak to Alice because Alice is, you know, being withdrawn and kind of disassociating from real life because of her relationship with Chauncey. So eventually the therapist shows up and she wants to have a session with Alice on camera. So the doctor has a camcorder. Excuse me. The doctor brings her camcorder and records the session. She starts to talk to Alice about, you know, Chauncey and, you know, why things have been weird since Chauncey's been around. Alice starts talking about the game that she's been playing with Chauncey, the scavenger hunt game. Eventually, the therapist has Alice face Chauncey and actually talk to him. And basically, the therapist wants Alice to tell Chauncey how she feels. How do you feel that Chauncey asked you to do something that would hurt you very badly? And again, this is a scene that's represented in the trailer. She starts yelling at Chauncey, saying, you know, maybe we shouldn't be friends. But then suddenly we start to hear Chauncey's voice. And it's not like I said earlier, it's Alice's voice, just her doing her best Christian Bale Batman to represent Chauncey's voice. As she's talking as Chauncey at one point, and at the end of the sentence where she's where her and Chauncey are arguing, she actually turns towards the camera. Her mouth is not moving, but we still hear Chauncey's voice. So this is the first time that we start getting, like, tangible proof that there's something going on in this house. The therapist is confused. She goes to Jessica and says, does Alice know ventriloquism? Has she been learning ventriloquism lately? Jessica says no. The therapist shows her the video. They fast forward to the end where we see Alice turn towards the camera, her mouth not moving, but we still hear Chauncey's voice. And then Jessica asks, well, did the bear move, or, you know, was the voice coming from the bear? And then the therapist says, what bear? Now, mind you, folks, Jessica and Alice both have been seeing Chauncey the teddy bear all through this movie. Remember, Alice found him in the basement. As soon as Alice found him, Jessica saw it, interacted with it, actually picked it up at one point. There was a little bit of a scare in Alice's bedroom where Jessica thought that Alice was under the sheets. She saw movement, but then she looks out the window and sees Alice outside, realizes that it's Chauncey in the bed. But again, you know, it doesn't – oops, sorry. As soon as she pulls off the covers, you know, the bear doesn't move, so she's left there confused, blah, blah, blah. And like I said – the therapist then fast forwards the video even farther and shows that there is no teddy bear sitting on the couch where we thought the teddy bear was. All through the session that we as the audience were watching, Chauncey was sitting at the corner of the couch. But then this is where we get the reveal that there is no teddy bear. There's literally no teddy bear. Alice and Jessica are the only ones who've seen the bear. Taylor didn't see the bear. Max didn't see the bear. They all assumed that she was just talking to Chauncey, her imaginary friend. They didn't realize that there was a tangible physical item representing Chauncey. So that was kind of an interesting little reveal, because obviously there's something going on with Jessica and Alice because they're the only ones who can see this teddy bear. Eventually, okay, what ends up happening that night is Alice is, you know, she's freaked out a little bit because of the session, you know, because of, you know, her and Chauncey yelling at each other. Jessica asks Taylor to go upstairs and stay with Alice and just, you know, stay with her, just keep her safe. Of course, Taylor ends up going downstairs for the fucking specific purpose of just yelling at Jessica, of just calling her a bitch again and saying that everything is her fault and you'll never be my mom and blah, 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 all the just angsty bullshit that we're so sick of fucking hearing. And in that time, Alice fucking disappears. Alice, when everybody goes back upstairs to the bedroom, Alice is gone, completely gone, vanished in midair. They call the police and fucking the police start a search, but they still don't know where Alice is. To the point where Taylor, the older daughter, the fucking bitch whose fault it was that Alice goes missing, starts yelling at Jessica, saying, it's your fault that Alice ran away. It's your fault this and that. Bitch, you were supposed to be watching her. Are you fucking kidding me? angsty teenager or not, you're a fucking idiot, Taylor. You're a fucking idiot. God damn it. It's just so stupid. All right, so... anyway, at that point, they run into the crazy neighbor again, the old lady. When the old lady realizes that Alice is missing, she starts talking about the never ever. And the never ever is kind of that imaginary realm here in this
movie. Wow, sounds very reminiscent of things we've heard before in Blumhouse movies.
I know, the further. It's nothing like the further at all.
The never ever is ridiculously uncreative.
It is. I mean, it had to be created by a child. It's the only explanation. Oh, so bad. So anyway, like I said, at this point, the neighbor Gloria realizes that Alice has now gone into the never ever, which is where Jessica went into as a child during the cold open. The cold open is interesting. I forgot to mention that we see Jessica as an adult, but she's replaying the events from when she was a child. So it's kind of that's why that cold open out of context is maybe a little confusing. But then we start to get more context. We start to, like I said, Gloria says, okay, I think I know what we need to do. We need to play the game that Chauncey had Alice play. Collecting up all the stuff, doing all the things on the list, like, you know, burning and you know, hurting yourself and everything else to try to open this portal. They end up finding a blue painted square in the room where Alice found Chauncey. they painted, you could see that Alice paints a blue square there. And then Chauncey instructs her to burn all the items that she's been collecting, you know, all the scavenger hunt items that she's been collecting. She's supposed to burn them, and by burning them, it opens a portal, which is exactly what happens. So Gloria realizes that's what needs to be done. We need to get into that. We need to get into the Never Ever. So they go, luckily, Jessica earlier in the movie had taken a picture of the list, probably for the therapist. So she's able to go ahead and reproduce everything, get something happy, get something, you know, get a bowl, get something to start a fire. And then we get to the last, well, one of the last steps, and it's something that hurts you. Jessica assumes that the quote-unquote thing that hurts you has to be physical, that you have to physically hurt yourself. So Jessica actually, like I think she stabs herself in the hand or something like that with something along those lines with like a pair of scissors or something, you know, allowing a few drops of blood to fall into the bowl. So at this point, everything is collected. They light the contents of the bowl. Everything burns. We start to think that something's about to happen. Like the music starts to swell up, but then the fire goes out. The fire in the bowl goes out completely and no portal is open. Nothing's happened. At that point, Jessica realizes that she might have made a mistake about one of the items on the list. So what she ends up doing is turning towards Taylor, her stepdaughter, and she starts fucking railing on her. You know, what is wrong with you? How can you be so stupid to let your sister disappear? All you had to do was watch her. Basically just berating her. Basically something that Jessica's never done, at least not in the movie. We haven't seen Jessica treat Taylor or any of the girls like this. You know, calling her a selfish little bitch and just everything else. And then Taylor basically, like, takes a breath and says, whoa, that was brutal. And then at that exact moment, the fire in the bowl relights itself. It lights up again. So obviously the thing that you needed to do that hurt isn't physical. It's emotional pain that you had to do. So I'm not sure why Alice was going to slam her hand down on that rusty nail, but whatever. She probably misunderstood the instruction as well, just like Jessica did. So, and at this point, when the fire relights up, the portal opens and the blue door opens up. Unfortunately, at this point, they're in the outer room, the small room that Chauncey was found in. Jessica wants Taylor to stay behind so that she doesn't get trapped in the Never Ever just in case they're not able to get out. Unfortunately, the door to the outer room closes, locking all three of them, Taylor, Jessica, and the neighbor Gloria, into the small room. So they're like, well, screw it. We're trapped in here, so let's just go into the Never Ever. All three of them go into the Never Ever. And like I said, it's just a dreamlike, you know, lightning flashes and fog, and it's just a very dreamlike state. There's one room that kind of looks like that M.C. Escher painting with all the stairs going in weird directions. There's like one room that looks like that. Blah, blah, blah. There's different rooms all over. And what the Never Ever is basically, oh, I forgot. Gloria does give an explanation at one point in the film about imaginary friends. Apparently, imaginary friends are actually, in this world anyway, in the world of this film, imaginary friends are actually real. They're not necessarily friends that kids just make up. They're actually spirits of the dead. They're recently deceased people who just attach themselves to a child, because since children are receptive to the supernatural, they can see ghosts, they can communicate with them. So when a child sees a spirit, they actually say, oh, it's my imaginary friend. But it's actually a spirit, a legitimate spirit of a person who was once alive on this planet. But what happens is the longer that the imaginary friend stays attached to the child, the more it hurts when the child finally leaves, you know, kind of stops acknowledging the imaginary friend. Now, the reason why Chauncey specifically is still in this house is because Jessica was, she had an extraordinary imagination as a child. And the fact that she's an award-winning kids book writer, children's author, kind of shows that. You know, she has a series, Molly the Millipede, I think, is the child, the children's book series that she writes. It's basically two characters, a spider and a millipede, and all through their adventures, the millipede thinks that the spider wants to eat the millipede. But the moral of the story, by the time we get to the final book and the final story, is that the spider actually loved the millipede and wanted to be friends, but that by the end, by the time the spider was so old that he couldn't speak and he couldn't chase anymore, Molly the millipede realized, oh, you actually just wanted to be friends, and then he dies. And then the spider dies. And this is a children's book, too, so a pretty heavy children's book anyway. That's why Chauncey is still in this house. He knew that Jessica would be back. He knew that if he just waited, there'd be a reason why Jessica would come back. And obviously, with her father going to a facility for, you know, senior citizens, it left the house open for Jessica and her new family to move in. So, boom, they move in. So, back to the Never Ever. Once we're in the Never Ever, like I said, they're going from room to room. We get some different horror set pieces where we see Chauncey as the giant bear chasing them. And when I say giant, I mean a big fucking bear. Like, he's like 9 feet tall, maybe. Big claws, sharp teeth, very menacing looking. He's chasing them all throughout the Never Ever. Eventually, Gloria ends up turning on Jessica and Taylor while they're in the Never Ever. When they first walk into the realm, Taylor leaves something to hold the portal open because it'll just shut if they just leave it. So she like jams her cell phone or something in between there to keep the portal shut. Gloria at one point pulls the thing out of there, locking all three of them into the Never Ever. And this is when Gloria kind of reveals herself that she's been trying to get back to the Never Ever. Well, not back to, because she's never been there before. She was upset that she didn't get the chance to go when Jessica went, you know, 20 years earlier or whatever it was, because of all the stories. Because Gloria actually is a paranormal writer as well. So she, you know, she always had these theories about what the Never Ever was. So once they're in there, she doesn't want to leave. So she, like I said, she takes the phone or whatever it is that they were propping the door closed open with. And then the door closes, but Gloria starts getting real cryptic about, you know, Chauncey made a deal with me that if I would bring you back, he would give me exactly what I want. Because ultimately in the Never Ever, you're presented with your version of paradise. Like all the kids and everybody else that all the imaginary friends take and bring into the Never Ever, it's not to torture them and kill them. It's literally to provide them with paradise so that they stay young forever and continue to use their imagination. That's how imaginary friends kind of get their power, is from kids imagining them. You know, the kids have to imagine them, kind of will them into life, if you will. And that's how imaginary friends get their power. So, at this point, after Gloria has turned on Jessica and Taylor, one of the side door opens, and we see a giant bear claw come out of the room, pull Gloria in, and basically kill her off-site. Unfortunately, it is a PG-13 movie, so we're not going to see any on-screen kills, so don't even hope for that. After Gloria is dispatched, Taylor and Jessica start running around the Never Ever trying to find another way to get out, blah, blah, blah. They're not able to find another exit, but what they find is Alice, the real Alice, but she's in a simulation of her room back at her old house. Not the house that Jessica grew up in, but the apartment where they lived in the city. Alice is in her bedroom. She's wearing a princess dress. She's surrounded with birthday presents. She's just, you know, and obviously Jessica's like, all right, Alice, come on, let's go. We got to get out of here. Alice, of course, doesn't want to leave. She's like, why would I leave? I'm happy here. I have all these presents. You know, I'm never going to get old, blah, blah, blah. It's like, why would I leave? Finally, Chauncey does show up. And, Jessica decides, well, wait a minute. if I have one of the most powerful imaginations, you know, out there that Chauncey wanted me back so bad, maybe I can use my imagination now. And that's exactly what she does. She actually grabs Taylor and starts taking pieces of blue paper. There's blue, like, gift wrap and all sorts of different blue ribbon and things in the room. She starts taking all the blue stuff, construction paper, everything, anything that's blue, and she starts pasting it to the wall, just grabbing paste, pasting it to the wall. Eventually, Alice thinks that Taylor and Jessica are having fun, so she then gets up and starts helping with the blue paper. Eventually, they get the full shape of the square door, and it ends up opening because of Jessica's imagination. Again. Yeah.
Did you find it kind of funny how quick the little girl?
She wasn't even threatened or anything. She just on a dime decided, fuck it, I want to leave.
Yeah, because like at first she was like, no, I don't want to leave because this is like such a great place. I can do anything I want. And then as everyone else was kind of freaking out, she's like, oh, I guess it's time. They didn't really have to convince her that much. Like, I don't know what it was supposed to be that changed her mind to where she's was like adamant, nope, I want to leave now.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, literally, at least to me, it looked like Taylor and Jessica were putting the paper up on the wall, and Jessica was talking about, well, if I have a powerful imagination, I can go ahead and use it. And then Alice just smiles and starts helping with the portal. And it's like, well, okay. That's weird. So anyway, what ends up happening is they do end up getting out of the portal. They are able to close the door behind them, and then the scene fades to black. The scene fades back up, and we're at the hospital. Well, we're at the facility where Jessica's dad is being kept. And he's bedridden. He's blind. He can't see. So he eventually Jessica's there, and she's reading a passage from her final book, her final Molly the Millipede book. And, you know, she finishes reading it, she puts the book down, and then when she looks up, her whole family's there. The husband, Max, is back, he's there, Alice, Taylor, they're all there, and everybody is extremely loving. Like, everybody's like, oh, I'm so happy that we got through that, and blah, blah, blah. Eventually, Taylor, the absolute bitch, teenage daughter, actually looks at Jessica and says, I'm sorry I gave you such a bad time. I'm glad that you gave me a chance and that, you know, we're able to build a relationship now. And then she looks at her and says, I love you, Mom. Mom. Taylor called Jessica Mom. Instantly, Jessica's like, oh, shit, I'm still here, aren't I? And at that exact moment, the entire family tilts their head to the right and their eyes go black. And, yeah, that's something about this movie that bothered me. This movie has multiple endings. Like, I wanted this movie to end, like, three times, and they kept extending it, and it starts to get tropey. So at this point, yep, we're back. We're still in the Never Ever. And then Max, with his black eyes, speaking as Chauncey, starts talking about how you'll never get out of here, Jessica. If you care about your family, you will stay here. I'll leave them alone as long as you stay here with me. Jessica eventually says, okay, if it'll guarantee my family's safety, fine. I will stay here with you. And right when she says that, Taylor shows up with her lacrosse stick and bashes Chauncey in the back of the head, you know, her father as Chauncey, bashes him in the back of the head and says, I fucking think not, or something like that. You know, some weird, you know, hokey line. Her and Jessica once again continue to try to get the fuck out of the further. Now, this is the part that where it loses me. I don't remember how they actually got out. They got out through the original opening, didn't they? Yeah, that's right. That's right. They got out through the original opening. Somehow, the original opening that Gloria had closed when she turned on them, somehow they were able to open it again, get through the door, and this time when they closed the portal. They grabbed black paint, just like the dad did in the previous, you know, years ago, and tried to paint over the blue that they had drawn on the wall. This time, though, the portal reopens on its own, and Chauncey is there, but Chauncey is there as his second form this time. As I've already been alluding to, Chauncey has two major forms in this one, not counting the original, the little teddy bear. There's the big giant bear that we saw in the trailer, but then he also has a spider form, and that spider form is reminiscent of the spider from Jessica's stories. So, like I said, Jessica had such a strong imagination that Chauncey wanted to keep her, and he loved her imagination so much that he actually used one of her creations as one of his forms, and that was the spider. So, like I said, when the portal door reopens, this time Chauncey, as the spider, sticks his head out, tries to grab Jessica to pull her back into the Never Ever. Fortunately, Taylor and Alice are able to pull Jessica out. They pull her out. They grab the black paint, cover over the door. This time they're successful in covering over the door. Unfortunately, in the struggle to get through the door, Jessica looked into Chauncey's eyes. And if you remember, I mentioned that her father was blind. He was not blind before the events of that night when Jessica disappeared. So now we see Jessica look into the eyes of Chauncey, and then her eyes gloss over white, and now Jessica has lost her sight as well. And if I remember correctly, there's one epitaph scene. The movie basically ends at the hospital. Jessica is being led out of the hospital by Taylor and Alice. Somehow she got her sight back. So I'm not sure if maybe she didn't look at Chauncey's eyes long enough to go completely blind. But she does have her sight back at the end of the movie. And then all three of them, Jessica, Alice, and Taylor, they turn around to leave the hospital, and they see Chauncey looking up over the back of a chair. All three of them freeze, and then this time Taylor goes, "I see him too. I see him this time." And it's definitely Chauncey. It's not like a duplicate or just another brown bear. It's the exact same bear from the house. They all decide, you know what? Let's get out of here. Let's go somewhere else. They end up leaving. And then the last thing we see is the little boy who's holding Chauncey at the hospital is basically saying, "Chauncey's hungry. He wants to eat something." I totally forgot. I didn't even mention that through the movie. Chauncey is always hungry, according to Alice. Alice says that Chauncey's always hungry. And, you know, anytime that Jessica serves Alice food, she has to serve a second portion for Chauncey. That does actually end up disappearing. So is Alice eating it? Is Chauncey eating it? I don't know. But like I said, at the end of the movie, we see the little kid with the Chauncey bear, and he says, I don't think he says the name Chauncey, but he basically says, you know, "My bear is hungry. He's hungry." And the mom, we hear the kid's mom go, "He's always hungry." And then the movie just kind of ends. So obviously, it looks like Chauncey has moved on to easier fare since he can't seem to get Jessica or Alice. So, and that's the end of our movie, folks. Thankfully, that is the end of our movie. Just, yeah. Sometimes when I talk about movies, when I do the walkthrough, I end up liking them more. Not this time, my friends. Yeah, this actually made me hate the movie more.
I was semi-okay with the Never Ever sequences and stuff. It was nothing mind-blowing, but it was at least it felt like, oh, they decided we're going to get 15 minutes of a horror movie, I guess.
Exactly. Here's 15 minutes of a horror movie at the end of our hour and 45-minute movie. Enjoy. Yeah, Blumhouse, man. We've been calling Blumhouse a jump scare factory for years, and they're really living up to that title in 2024. Like, I don't think they've put out a good movie yet. Just a bunch of jump scares. It's too bad.
Yep, I agree.
Well, 2024 in general has just been shit, so I don't think it's just them.
Oh, man. Well, let's hope. I mean, we've got a string of theatrical releases in front of us. I'm hoping that at least one of them may be Immaculate, maybe Sting, maybe Abigail.
What's releasing this week?
This week is the sneak preview of Immaculate. So there's no actual horror release this week. I don't know if you guys, I told you in the chat that they're doing a one-night screening of Immaculate before it's, because it releases officially March 22nd. But on the 13th, which is actually in 2 days, AMC Cinemas are doing a one-night sneak preview presentation. Officially nothing opens this week. But, yeah, after this, again, we're in the theater 7 out of 8 weeks for March and April. So
yeah, and I think I was mentioning in the chat, I think on the 22nd, Immaculate and Late Night with the Devil releases in the theaters. But Late Night with the Devil also has an early April release on Shudder too, so I don't know.
I already know what Don's going to say, and I 100% agree.
Yeah.
Late Night with the Devil is a movie I've been waiting for. I could give two shits about Immaculate, honestly. I literally couldn't care less. But Late Night with the Devil, I mean, everything that David Dash Melian, whatever, however you pronounce
Dalmatian.
His name. And Dalmatian. Everything that he's done lately has been awesome, and I'm really looking forward to this. Plus the sheer concept of it, too, to actually...
I will say this. I have already seen a sneak preview for it.
Oh, okay.
It is as advertised.
Awesome. That's all I need.
It is as advertised. I will give no further spoilers, and you will not pry anything out of me short of torturing family drama.
Nope.
I will say it is as advertised. I will put it that.
Nice. Okay. I will not torture your dog. No.
So, assuming I can't get to an Immaculate sneak preview, then we'll probably do VOD because
more than likely
there is a movie coming out this week I really do want to see, and it's been getting pretty good advanced reviews. It's just not a horror movie, unfortunately. It's Love Lies Bleeding by, I think it's Neon Studios that's doing it. It looks like a acid trip of a revenge story, which is cool. It's just not horror, so it's not for fresh cuts. But
I'm going to see Kung Fu Panda. I fucking love Kung Fu Panda. I don't care. I'll die on that hill.
Yeah, the following weekend on the 22nd, I might try to obviously we're gonna do Late Night with the Devil, but I might try to see if I can just watch both movies just for the hell of it. You know, it's not too often that there's I have enough time to pull a double movie or a double feature at the theater, but I might just try just to bust them both out. We'll see. So next episode, probably going back to VOD. Hopefully there's something better to choose from, but who knows? I mean, to be honest, Imaginary is not that much higher caliber than what a lot of what we've seen on VOD. We could still end up reviewing something more favorable this next episode. But before, we officially get out of here, let's go around the room and see if there's anything new from anyone. So, Venom, do you have anything coming out that's new?
Yes, Mike and myself, finally, after almost a year, are finally back with an episode of the Crystal Lake Gift Shop. Yes, the gift shop is back open after almost a year. Once again, our guest for that episode was Miss Lacey Liu. And for those who don't know, that is, of course, our episode-by-episode retrospective of the Friday the 13th television series that aired from 1987 to 1990. We are on episode 4, which that episode was called A Cup of Time, about a cursed teacup. That episode is in the can. I'm in the process of editing that. I'm going to have that out before the end of this week. And the reason is because this Friday, at least tentatively as of right now, we do have another episode of Creature Comforts coming down the line. And we are going to look at the Natasha Henstridge classic Species. I say classic with a question mark because, I don't know, some people love this movie. The last time I watched it, I wasn't a huge fan, but I still am going to look forward to watching it again because,
from what I remember, Species is basically softcore porn, so I'm excited.
I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember liking it. You know, not you know, I remember I wasn't blown away by it, but it was still an enjoyable, serviceable, cool alien creature flick. So
potentially, I think maybe the sexuality was a little heavy for me. You know, the whole thing with her wanting to just fuck every guy on Earth or whatever.
It was maybe it'll male gaze type shit. The way
exactly.
She was just nude throughout,
I think, at the time. Yeah, and at the time, those kind of movies just weren't doing a lot for me. Like, I remembered preferring stuff like The Relic over Species, and Mimic, too. I remember liking Mimic more than Species, but who knows? Maybe Species will speak to me more this time around. So, yeah, tentatively, episode 24 of Creature Comforts will be recorded this weekend, where we'll look at Species. Episode 23 is still our latest episode, where we looked at Neil Marshall's Dog Soldiers, so check that out. And unfortunately, the main show was postponed this weekend. I am the culprit this time. Unfortunately, I had a little issue with the wife and her health, but everything's good. All is well. Just a minor scare last night, but otherwise, all is well. So like I said, hopefully, knock on wood, this week we will get that new episode out, and these are going to be Mike's picks, where we're actually going to be looking at a pair of William Castle movies. So that should be fun. And that's about all I have on the docket for now, Mike.
All right. Don, how about you?
As mentioned, looking forward to Creature Comforts. I'm like you. I haven't seen it in a while. I did remember liking it, but I'm pretty sure a lot of that was, teenage horniness.
Yeah.
Rather than genuine analytical critique.
Sure.
So it's another one of those I haven't seen for a while, so I'm kind of looking forward to seeing where it stacks up. But looking forward to that. Latest episode of the main show is still out there, so give that one a listen. Would You Die? Maybe it's like maybe an episode or two back. But, still available for me with my talk on Godzilla. And one that I kind of just happened upon as a, last minute kind of a thing, spurred on by our last episode, I joined in the Horror Returns. I've been with them in the past, so, no real introduction necessary, but I ended up doing a double bill of Giallo with them. So they were planning on another guest. It fell through, and they remembered, one of the guys remembered our latest episode on Argento. So they asked me to come on. No real prep work necessary, but it's for Bird with the Crystal Plumage and Don't Torture a Duckling. So I'm not like I need prep work for those. that is available. You can find that on the Horror Returns feed. Search that everywhere. You'll find them. Literally, they're everywhere. The one thing I did wanted to bring up was a rather odd situation with my show, Horror Countdown. For those that don't know, if you're looking for the latest episode, it's not there. I did the episode. I did everything as normal. I shared it with the co-host and found out that they had wanted to give pre-approval to it for some reason. They wanted to know what it would sound like. They were worried that there was a series of pauses and like really weird, structural issues and that they didn't sound as good as they did. They didn't sound as good as they wanted to, so they wanted to have a listen to it before the episode went live to give an okay and say, okay, yeah, you can go ahead. So I didn't. I just assumed, everything was normal. So I released it. I shared it with them, and then I was in the process of sharing it normally when we kind of got into it and, they kind of blew up about it. So I kind of downplayed it, took it down, and we're going to re-record the episode, so I never even officially got a chance to share it. So I don't know if it even showed up in podcatchers for even like a hot minute, but I mean the episode was live for maybe 10, 15 minutes at most. I think it was maybe five, but I mean, who's counting? But we're going to re-record the episode hopefully sooner rather than later. But because of the lateness of how everything went down and all of that, I don't have a new episode, so we're going to skip the week. But, you know, look forward to the next episode. That one is done and available, and hopefully I'll have it ready to go by regular time. So, I can't say anything this week, but I'm looking forward to getting back on schedule next week. But, yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
All right. As far as I go, yeah, nothing that Venom hasn't already mentioned. So, yeah, that's it. And like I said, VOD, or a brief VOD this next episode, and we have yet to really dive into, like, everything that's available. So we'll figure that out during the week and be back next week with an episode. So with that said, thank you everyone for listening. We will catch you next time. Let's say bye to our listeners.
Later.
Jason Blum, there's director's art there by the name of Flanagan, Perkins, Astor, just actual good directors. How about try hiring one of them? I don't know. It's just an idea. I don't know.
All right. Peace.